everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's April 2024, and this is episode 386, which is a discussion of the controversy with Alistair Begg and about answering the question if Christians can attend a gay wedding. Today's guest is Anne Kennedy. She has an MDiv and is the author of Nailed It, 365 Readings for Angry or Worn Out People. Anne blogs about current events and theological trends at standfirminfaith.com and on her Substack, Demotivations with Anne. Anne has written a viewpoint article for the Christian Research Journal. Our viewpoint column addresses relevant contemporary issues in discernment and apologetics from a particular perspective that's not usually shared by all Christians. We hope that readers and our listeners thinking on these viewpoint issues will be stimulated and enhanced, whether or not you end up agreeing with the author. Anne's article is called, Can a Christian Attend a Gay Wedding? A Response to Alistair Begg. You can read her viewpoint article for free at our website, equip.org. That's EQUIP.org. Anne, it's good to have you back on the podcast.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Well, as I mentioned, today we are going to be talking about the recent controversy surrounding Pastor Alistair Begg. Actually, back in January of this year, Alistair Begg, he is pastor of Parkside Church, which is in Ohio, and he's also the host of a radio program called Truth for Life. And he's been caught up in a controversy over advice he gave in a sermon about attending an LGBTQ wedding. And actually, that sermon was a response to remarks he gave on a promotional book tour back in the fall of 2023. And someone asked about attending a Christian, if a Christian could attend an LGBTQ wedding. But before we get into the Alistair Begg controversy in particular, about which Anne has written an article for us, I want to note to our listeners that we actually covered this exact issue, and we did it before also in a viewpoint column. It was a pro-con series, so one for each side, and we published it 9 years ago. It was called Should Christians Attend Same-Sex Weddings? We had a pro and a con, and our listeners can read it for free at our website, equip.org. But that was almost 10 years ago, and I think a lot has changed in almost 10 years since we last published on this particular topic of Christians attending a gay wedding. So I'd like to ask Anne, first of all, how have, you know, new standards of what I would call cultural orthodoxy changed in the past 10 years, especially as it relates to issues regarding the LGBTQ community and Christian, I would say, perhaps affirmation or acceptance of that community?
Yeah, the world 10 years ago was a lot maybe less volatile than it is now. I mean, I remember thinking things were kind of crazy 10 years ago, but now it seems like the halcyon days that of quiet and calm agreement amongst Christians over many things. But since then, we've had the Obergefell ruling, which really changed the shape of our country, of American politics and identity politics, but it also has had just a huge effect on the discourse amongst Christians. And I think where this was a kind of a theoretical issue maybe 10 years ago, people might have thought about it. They might have known somebody who was grappling with this issue. Now, I don't know of anyone who hasn't had a direct engagement with it. Almost everyone know someone who has maybe gotten married in a non-Christian way, or I mean, I guess at some point we can make a distinction between Christian marriage and just sort of regular non-Christian marriage. But I don't know of anybody who doesn't know somebody who's been married in along the LGBTQ acronym, or know somebody who's tried to change their gender or name, or who is identifying primarily with their sexual feelings. And that's really changed, I think, how the issue is living itself out. And I think that was very interesting, given what Beg said, which we'll get into. It felt to me as if he were talking about the issue as if it was a long time ago, and not as if we're in 2024. And it's one of the major points of division between Christians and the world, and Christians and each other. I think one of the things that was said to Christians around the time of Obergefell is, you don't need to worry about what people do privately in their bedrooms. That's not any of your concern. Nothing's going to change. And in a very swift, short order, we saw that that wasn't true. What happens in the privacy of a sexual relationship has huge implications for culture and for theology even. And so there's been this sort of like almost like the cliff has fallen away underneath the house. And so people are disoriented. They're not sure. I think Christians are getting used to the idea that they are wrong, morally wrong in cultural terms about this issue. And they're having to make real sacrificial and painful decisions about it. It's symbolic of many other issues. And so it can't just be kind of a very easy, like, love your neighbor or do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Some of the easy ways out of, or more obvious ways out of, moral dilemmas that we've had over the last 100 years are not standing up to this particular issue.
Well, as a matter of fact, Obergefell happened in the summer of 2015, and we published that article in 2015, 9 years ago. So a lot has happened, and I think you're right. Back when we published it, it wasn't the kind of front and center cultural issue, or more, I'd say, to the point, personal issue for people, whether it be family members or friends or coworkers, where someone gets an invitation, because back then it just wasn't maybe the norm that it is today in terms of cultural mores. So to get to the controversy with Alistair Begg in particular, what happened that really kind of was consuming a lot of the Christian blogosphere back in February regarding the controversy, which maybe came to the fore when he had that sermon in January, because I don't know that a lot of people were talking last fall about some book tour that he did where he offhand made a comment to a grandmother about an LGBTQ wedding.
Yes, it was interesting to look at the dates on things. The original interview was last year, and I remember listening to other podcasts about his, where he was kind of doing the circuit, and I missed this one. And I guess a lot of people have time on their hands and just go Googling things maybe well after the fact. So somebody, or maybe somebody was just listening to it and hadn't, I don't remember how it kind of came into the social media space so suddenly and so quickly. But of course, the way that it works, you're minding your own business, and then you wake up in the morning and your Twitter feed is full of overwrought people who are freaking out about one matter or another. And sometimes it's something real, and sometimes the drama is totally fake. But in many cases, I think it's a real issue. It's a little bit of a live wire, of course, about the issue of the day, which is a grandmother wrote to him of his public ministry and his radio content, asking advice about whether she should attend a wedding, the wedding of her grandchild. And there's a little bit of a discrepancy. In the original interview, Beg says that it's a grandmother talking about her grandson. In the sermon that comes later in January, he's talking about a granddaughter. And so I'm not really sure, you know, where, why, maybe he forgot, or I don't know, maybe it could maybe even be more than one instance. But he gave the advice to the grandmother that she should go to the ceremony. And he asked a series of questions. He asked, does your grandson understand your belief in Jesus? And the grandmother said that yes. And then he said, does your grandson understand that your belief in Jesus makes it such that you can't countenance in any affirming way the choices that he has made in life? And the grandmother said yes. And then Beg said, well, then as long as he knows that, I suggest that you go to the ceremony and buy them a gift. And this surprised the grandmother, so she must not have expected this answer. And he said to the interviewer, your love for them may catch them off guard, but your absence will simply reinforce the fact that they said, these people are what I always thought, judgmental, critical, unprepared to countenance anything. And so that was the line, I think, that really got people going. It certainly surprised me, because I've been, you know, my husband and I have been in a church for 20 years now, and asking somebody a question like, does your grandson understand your belief in Jesus, is really subjective. You may think that your family member knows the depth of your Christian faith, but they also may not know that. So that, to base it, the advice on the grandmother's perception of the grandchild's understanding seemed to me pretty thin. And then that Beg accepted this, that many people think Christians are judgmental, critical, and unprepared to countenance anything, I think is to take a pretty hostile view of Christian thought at the moment and action, and accept it as given, and then kind of give advice from there. So that was the original. I think that's why people were just so upset, because Beg was trying to nuance something, but in so doing, he accepted a lot of very unnuanced feelings that people have about Christianity and this issue. And it seems like from the get-go, he thinks that Christians have been doing it wrong for maybe the last 10 years and are getting to be hard and mean on this question. Which I wouldn't agree with at all. But anyway, that was the original controversy. And he called it a tempest in a teacup, or a storm in a teacup, which, of course, Twitter or X is very tiny. It's very small. It is, any storm that goes on there is going to be, by nature, ridiculous. But because it has such an outsized influence over the thought of people in pulpits and, you know, who are doing theological work, I think it really does mean that we should pay attention to what people are saying there.
So back in January, everything, that's when it blew up. Like you said, maybe his comments really weren't reported on when he made them back in the fall. So then he did a follow-up to those comments when they just came to the fore. And that was back in January. So tell us a little bit about his response to the answer he gave the grandmother, which he talked about a little bit more in a sermon that he gave.
Yeah, so the original interview was its own thing, and I think you could probably continue to debate that. But really, I think where the rubber met the road was in the sermon, and that's what I found to be really, for me, I have really benefited from Beg's preaching over the years. He's been an enormous encouragement to me and my husband as we've tried to survive ministry in a place where a lot of people run away from. So he's just helped us understand the sort of northern Christian, like Ohio, New York perspective on things, and he's really deft. His preaching looks really easy, but it's actually masterful the way he can preach something and make it, very simple and easy to grasp a complicated subject or doctrine or biblical truth for somebody who's maybe not very well educated, more working class, which is a lot of the population that we have up here. So my assumption whenever I hear his voice is that I'm going to be brought into the text and convicted and helped, and then I'm going to be able to carry on doing, serving the church and, mucking it out up here in the Northeast. And so I found his sermon just heartbreaking because it was the first time that I'd ever heard him misapply or just only find in the text parts of the exegesis kind of led him in a particular direction. And I really felt like he mishandled the text. I know people might not agree with me, but I was really sad and disappointed to hear the way that he worked through Luke 15. So that text has three parables that Jesus tells. He's the good shepherd and the lost sheep, the lost coin or the found coin, and then the prodigal son. And he started with the lost sheep, but just very briefly, and went straight in for the prodigal son, and likened Christian responses, or the Christian who says, "I don't think you should go to a gay wedding," or people who were responding to his advice, really, as like the Pharisees, who are hard-hearted against the Pharisee or the tax collectors, prostitutes, and sinners that Jesus went on purpose to find in his ministry and to rescue, which is, of course, very true and incontrovertible. Jesus came to save the lost, and he went to places that the religious rulers of his day would never go. And he wasn't worried about being polluted, or, of course, he could confer holiness and purity. He was never going to be tainted by other people's sin. And he spoke about the older brother who is angry that the prodigal comes home, won't rejoice, and is closed and judgmental towards the one who's been lost. And of course, it's the central story of the gospel. It's a deeply moving story. And he's preached on it before. We've enjoyed hearing him preach on this text in the past. But in this case, he took it and used it about this controversy. And it really, the text really doesn't work that well, because the grandmother who goes to the grandchild's wedding, I mean, it is a celebration. The key missing component is that the grandchild is still in the far country if that one is getting married to somebody that it's not a wedding. Two men getting married, or two women getting married, or, people who are changing their gender or trying to, that's not real marriage. And so the Christian can't go to a party that celebrates that, because it communicates something really deep and powerful about acceptance and celebration. Many people have pointed out that, all of the controversies around the LGBTQ movement have been about wedding celebrations, photography, cake decorating, invitation making, the kinds of ways that you mark that something is blessed and celebratory. Those are ways that Christians are being kind of pressed to the edge because their affirmation is being demanded. So it's really curious to me that Begg would sort of ignore the huge body of writing and controversy that's surrounded this issue over the past few years and just go straight for, well, it's not loving if you don't go, and you shouldn't communicate unlove or to somebody that you do love. There's been a lot of good writing on the subject and articles people have taken apart the sermon and made some of these points really well. But it is interesting to see how a text can be subverted just by ignoring certain parts of the story itself to make a larger point.
Even though the Christian Research Journal is now online completely free without a paywall, no subscription needed, and this is a place where you can access on our website, equip.org, more than 45 years of content. That's thousands and thousands of articles completely free to you. We would still ask that you would consider partnering with us. We have new content every single week, a brand new article. We do believe that our authors should be paid a remuneration for their research and work for us. And we continue to bring articles in classic apologetics and Christian living and cultural apologetics and ethics from a Christian perspective and all kinds of different content to equip you in your faith and to be able to share your faith and grow closer to Christ. And so we ask that you would partner with us by giving us a tip. It could be something very simple like $3, $5, $10, something that you could give us, maybe skip something in your entertainment budget for the week and give us a tip, which you can easily do at our website, equip.org. Go on there, click on journal, and at any one of the landing pages for Postmodern Realities, if you click on that, you will find a link to give us a tip. In addition, we would always ask that you would consider taking some of your time, which is completely free to you, and would you please give us a rating or review, particularly on Apple Podcasts, because as you know, the internet runs on algorithms, and those algorithms favor things that people think are popular to suggest them to other people. So would you please tell people why you listen to this podcast or give us a starred review? Now back to my conversation with Ann Kennedy about the controversy around Pastor Alistair Begg and answering the question, can a Christian attend a gay wedding? A few moments ago, you were talking about Begg's sermon and the parable of the prodigal son, and you mentioned the phrase real marriage. Before I want to ask you specifically about a gay wedding, I'd like you to explain. I just want to go all the way back because there might be some people listening who just think, what is the big deal with Christians and marriage? Shouldn't people who love one another be able to be married and have those same rights as heterosexual couples? So can you explain the Christian idea of marriage, what Christian marriage is, why you would call that real marriage, and why it's important?
Right. This is the major issue of our time. But marriage, in a Christian sense, is related to Christ and the church. So it is a reflection of how God rescues his people, how God the Father sent the Son into the world to claim for himself a bride and to make the church out of his side. And it captures all of the language in the Old Testament about the bridegroom and Israel, and how God chose for himself those whom he would love and he would care for and he would keep for himself. And it reflects the nature of God. It has to be male and female because of the husband-bride image, and because in Genesis, God made them male and female so that they could be joined together. It relates to human ontology in some sense, you know, how we're made, what we're made for, who we're made for. And Paul calls it a great mystery. It's one of the ways that God reflects his character into the world is through marriage. Every marriage, it doesn't have to be two Christians together, but every single marriage, Christians would say, reflect the union of Christ and the church in some way. They'll either tell the truth about what that is. They'll say that a proper and good and loving marriage would say that Jesus is faithful to his bride and the church loves her husband, Christ, and they are happily together forever. But, you know, in a situation where you have adultery or abuse or divorce, you see that that marriage is telling a lie about who God is and how, what kind of love he has for us. And so that's one reason why it's so fraught and why the church has been so careful to guard it through the ages. It's not just that it's important for social harmony, for the protection of children, for the care of God's created order. All of those things are true. It's really that it goes to the very nature of God. It reflects something about who he is. And so it isn't ours to mess around with. Especially if you are a Christian, your marriage should be ordered along its divine purposes. But even in secondary cases, you know, you could go to the wedding of two friends who don't believe in God, if they were a man and a woman, and that wouldn't distort your Christian witness at all, because it's properly ordered. It's a man and a woman. Even though they don't know it, they're still going to reflect something about God's character into the world. Of course, it would be even better if you were able to tell them about Jesus, if they became Christians, then they could do it overtly and knowledgeably rather than accidentally if they turned out to have a good marriage. So that's what I mean by real marriage. Anything that subverts that, we can call it marriage, but it isn't marriage for real. It's some sort of twisting of it. So if a man marries more than one woman, that there are allowances for that in scripture, but those allowances went away in the new covenant. Men were not supposed to marry more than one woman. In every case where that happens in the Old Testament, it ends in a heartbreaking way, or it's not affirmed by scripture. But a marriage between two men or two women, or I've come across things now like self-marriage, where a woman will throw herself a party and make vows to herself and wear a big dress. That's not real marriage. You can say that you've married yourself, but it's not real. So we're using the word as a culture, and it's stretched really beyond its breaking point, I think. And yet I think Christians should really hold tight to the word marriage and insist on its use as long as they can, because it does mean something even when nobody recognizes its greater meaning.
And this is not snark, this is very serious, but I have seen coverage in the New York Times and other places where people have married their dogs, for example, in a very serious ceremony. It wasn't meant to be funny or anything. But at the same time, there are some Christians that obviously don't have those same views of what they think the Bible teaches about marriage. And so they give various answers as to why it would be okay to attend a gay wedding, or they might have some kind of, yes, I believe marriage is between a man and a woman kind of, but these are the reasons why a Christian could go to a gay wedding. So what are some of those answers that Christians would justify attending a gay wedding?
I feel honestly that the reasons of justification are getting to be less and less as people, you know, as Christians are sort of losing the overall argument. I think these arguments were made more in depth, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. Now it often feels like Christians are being told, you know, just go to the wedding or you're a bigot kind of thing. That's as far as the discourse goes. But essentially, I think Christians who go to or feel that they might be permitted to go to a wedding like this, do it on the basis of love, which is what Begg appealed to. Your relationship with a person opens the door to the gospel and to the truth. And so if you shut that door, you are in some sense shunning or maybe anathematizing the person. And you're closing the door so firmly that it can't be opened again. And you will lose your ability to speak into that person's life. I think that's the biggest reason that people give. They might also think that the scriptures actually, well, Beg said it essentially, that Jesus ate with sinners. And so you don't want to communicate that you feel unclean or polluted or tainted from having been in a situation where something ungodly is going on. And I think that that answer does have some merit. I don't think that Christians shouldn't go to events like this because they're worried about becoming unclean or something like that. And if that's why, if you just find it so abhorrent to be with people you disagree with that you couldn't fathom going, or if you really felt hatred for someone and that's why you didn't want to go, that's not an acceptable reason to decline. I think the reason to decline would be because of love, not because of your personal inclination. And the thing is, people's motivations can be really hard to read, or even, you know, even your own motivations can be hard to know. We're not any of us as self-knowledgeable as we think we are, I think. So I'm a little bit suspicious of taking your personal feelings of love and making them the basis on which you would make a decision one way or the other. But that's really the main one why people might feel it was acceptable to go to a wedding, for the sake of communicating love so that the door to the gospel could be kept open.
Well, I think some Christians would say that they attend the weddings of heterosexual people who are non-Christians, and those people have no idea about some of the things you just said about marriage being a picture of Christ in the church, nor would they care if their marriage was. So I think the thought process would be, I go to weddings of non-Christian friends or heterosexual. Why wouldn't I go to a wedding of a friend who is getting married in a same-sex wedding? They're not Christians, and my heterosexual friends aren't Christians.
Yeah, I think if you're going to leave it at that, I guess your reasons for going or not going wouldn't have very much substance, and you would be able to go and not feel any particular qualms. But I think, it also depends on the nature of the relationship that you have with someone. If it's a family member or somebody that you're really close to, what you're communicating by going or not going is going to be a little bit different than if it's just, well, I'm going to everybody's wedding. You know, we all went to school at the same time. We all go to each other's weddings, whether it's same sex or heterosexual. I think Christians should go deeper than that. So even if they go to everybody's wedding and it just so happens to be a friend, they should take the opportunity to say, I can't go to your wedding because I love you, and this particular wedding is going to destroy you. It's something that God forbids. And even though you don't believe in God, you should consider his existence. And out of love, I'm telling you why you shouldn't do this. But I think I would also say, you know, there's some weddings, we don't think enough about weddings of people getting remarried when maybe the divorce wasn't justified in scripture. I think it would be a good moment for a Christian to say, I love you. I'm not going to come to your marriage to another person because I don't think that the way that that relationship ended was good. And I'm here for you once you've been married, but I can't celebrate this, which is kind of what you're saying in a same-sex situation. I'm here for you. I love you. We can have coffee. We can be together, but I cannot celebrate this self-destruction that you're undertaking. And I think if you really do believe that it's a self-destructive act, the stakes become more clear and intense. And what you're communicating is essential about the human soul and God and what's good for them and so many different things. So, I mean, I get maybe for those who just want no controversy, they should not think about it too much. But that's the whole problem, is that these are so essential to human order and society and civilization and personhood, that how we celebrate things and what exactly we're celebrating goes so far to the root of the person, you really do need to know ahead of time why you're doing it or not doing it.
There's two reasons that are given as to why a Christian might attend a same-sex wedding. And one of those is for keeping the door open, first of all, to the relationship of that person. So in this case, in the Alistair Begg, we're not clear if it was grandson or granddaughter, but a grandmother, to continue to have a good relationship with that grandchild. And also maybe as an opportunity for evangelism, especially, and I don't know if Begg made that extremely clear, like we were talking about earlier, just that this grandmother was very clear that she did not believe in this union. She did not believe that the Bible ordained homosexual relationships in any way. And so I think a lot of people do give that as keeping the door open for evangelism, even if she would say, okay, even if I go to your wedding, they would never be able to come. You would never be able to come to my home as a couple or stay in my, because I don't condone your relationship. But yet I want to try to, you know, evangelize you and or keep our relationship still good where you don't cut me off as your grandmother.
Yeah, I think the desire, I mean, it's so important. You have to be related to people. You have to have relationships with people in order to be able to say anything to them about Jesus. That is absolutely true. And so I think that's one reason why it's such a compelling thing to keep the door open, the door of the relationship open, so that you might speak about matters of faith. I just, you know, thinking over the times where I've seen this happen, even in, you know, my grandparents ended up with children and grandchildren who did not believe, and some did and some didn't. And they were very bold. They were missionaries. They loved the Lord. They were so faithful. But over time, their anxiety to be in relationship with the rest of my family really stopped them from saying the things that they were always expecting to say out of love because of the relationship. So they were keeping the door of the relationship open, but fear eventually began to govern that door. So it wasn't actually open, and they never had the freedom or authority to speak to their children and their grandchildren, which I think that they did have that authority. I'm just wondering, you know, I don't know at all the case that Begg was dealing with, but I think Christians have a lot more freedom to speak out of love than they expect. And I think people are a lot more needy to be affirmed than even they know. And so when you say, I really love you, and I am not coming to this event because I love you, and I'm going to tell you why. First of all, that would break the ice open. And I think Christians, that you would be able to speak out of real authority and love instead of the person who's getting married being in the driver's seat of the relationship, you, as the person who loves them, might gain a little bit more power to speak in that situation. And that's always the way it feels that it goes, that it's the Christian who will acquiesce to keep the door open, the relational door open. I don't know. I don't think that, if you want to talk about fruit, that approach has not produced the fruit that we're all expecting to see. And I think it's because it's not really biblical. I think there are other texts to go to in scripture that would indicate that saying no to somebody out of love produces great fruit. And St. Paul has many places where he says, you shouldn't do anything that will injure a weaker person. If you find out that the meat is being sacrificed to idols, you shouldn't eat it, because those who are caught in the grip of idol worship might be tempted. And so I think that going to a gay wedding is much more along those lines than it is about Pharisees and eating with sinners.
So what are some practical ways that we can love family members and siblings and maybe even children or grandchildren that are specifically with regard to this particular issue that are part of the LGBT community without compromising the gospel? Because I think some people, and we have done various different articles. I know your husband, Matt, has written some articles on these kinds of issues. You know, should you have your heterosexual, homosexual? Should you have your child and their partner come stay with you and stay in your home and at the same room kind of issue that we have a point counterpoint on unequipped.org as well. But what are some practical ways to be able to love them well? I think some people don't know if they feel that bold. They just feel like, well, if I love them well, I'll be like Jesus, where the sinners and tax collectors were happy to see them and he ate a meal with them. And what you're suggesting to out and out say this sounds too over the line, too bold.
I think one thing that, just practically speaking, I think Christians, I mean, this is an endemic in our culture, but Christians especially are conflict averse. They're afraid of conflict. And I think that the fear of conflict covers over a multitude of sort of hidden relational issues that never get resolved because nobody wants to take the first step and say something out loud. I think the most important thing that Christians can do today is disabuse themselves of the sort of trope that it's possible to speak the truth without love. I think that text is really misunderstood. If you are speaking the truth out of love because you love someone and you care about them, your tone is not the issue. The person will perceive you to have bad tone. That's just going to be the way it goes because the content of what you're saying is painful. So really, we need to get to the point, Christians do, where they are willing to speak the truth because they love. They need to evaluate their love and then decide that loving another person is more important than avoiding conflict. And then I think people practically should remind themselves that everybody is needy. And so there are a lot of ways to show affection and love and go close to someone without accepting the lies that they're telling themselves. I think there just needs to be a lot more creative thinking about relational conflict than narrowing it down to, do I have to go to this wedding or am I compromising my relationship with this person forever? I think we are really fixed in just a couple of controversies that have limited our vision for how we might communicate Christ's love in the world. And I think conflict is one of the best ways to communicate love. And coming really close to somebody, affirming who they are and how you love them, and then purposefully disagreeing with them on small matters will enable you to disagree with them on big ones and still maintain a relationship. That, and I don't think Christians pray enough. I think if you really love people in your family, in your community, if you really love your friends and you feel love for them and you know that you should love them, you need to be praying for them intensely and be willing to pray even when it's inconvenient, pray specifically, pray desperately, and then ask God to use you in their life. And I think, he will rescue people from bad situations through prayer, through conflict, and through courage. So, those are not probably the answers that I would want if I was asking someone, but I think it's down to the wire, and Christians really need to take their courage in their hands and speak to people about the truth, even when they know it's unacceptable to that person to hear it.
Well, that is definitely a lot of food for thought. But now, on a much lighter note, I have a question for Anne. In April, we're going to be celebrating National Picnic Day, which is at the end of the month, and it's a day set aside for friends and family to enjoy the outdoors and have a picnic. So does your family ever go on any picnics? And if you do, what are some of the kind of things that you do when you go on a picnic? And some of the things you eat, I guess.
Well, we picnic a lot because we have so many children and we can't afford to go to restaurants with them. And whenever we travel, I make a lot of hand pie, like meat and fruit pies that you just hold in your hand, like a whole pie. And so we'll roll up in any kind of field and I'll hand out all the pies and everybody will stand around and eat pies. And it's sort of legendary so that if we don't, eat meat pies in a field every summer, my kids feel like I don't love them.
Well, that is definitely a unique family tradition. Well, thanks, Anne, for being a guest again on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to episode 386 of the Postmodern Realities podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest was Anne Kennedy. She has written an online viewpoint article, and it is called "Can a Christian Attend a Gay Wedding? A Response to Alistair Begg." You can read her article for free at our website, equip.org. You won't want to miss out on subscribing to the other podcasts from the Christian Research Institute. We have the Bible Answer Man podcast, which is published Monday through Friday with the best of the week on Saturday. It's hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and is available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. In addition, Hank has a podcast called Hank Unplugged. Hank takes you out of the studio and into his study to engage in free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. And you won't want to miss out on the brand new podcast from the Christian Research Journal. Christian Research Journal Reads presents audio versions of Christian Research Journal articles. It was a print incarnation of almost 45 years. It's now on the web, as you know, with new articles every single week. So you won't want to miss these audio articles of some of our most popular and most accessed articles on our website, equip.org.